Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Take Command is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
I'm NFL linebacker TJ Watt, and this is my personal best. YPB by Abercrombie is the activewear I'm always wearing. That's why I reached out to Co-Design, their latest drop. I worked with designers to create high-performance activewear that holds up to my toughest workouts. Shop YPB by Abercrombie in-store, online, and in the app. Because your personal best is greater than anything.
Anybody, anywhere, anywhere.
It's time to take command.
The Cardiac Commanders are the Clutch Commanders!
With former NFL tight end, Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
This is the Take Command post-game show after the Commanders played in and lost in Atlanta on this Sunday afternoon alongside Kedrick Golston filling in for Logan Paulson who's traveling back. I'm Grant Paulson. 34-27 final score, the Falcons over the Commanders. So Washington's now 2-2. They've got a big home win, went on the road, got beat by the Packers, got a big home win, went on the road, now got beat by Atlanta. So playing every other here, boy, girl with the wins and losses, 0-2 on the road. It's a 7-point setback, Ked, on the hands of the Atlanta Falcons. 34-27, and this defense let the Falcons get right. They got shut out last week. There were calls for their quarterback, Michael Penix, to be benched. Their offensive coordinator went from calling the plays in the booth to the sideline. They fired a wide receiver coach, all leading up to 34 yards, 435 yards, and about 7 per play as they dominated the Washington defense.
Yeah, you know, obviously last week there was talks about is Penix the guy, should they go back to Cousins, and they made some staff changes, and then they got the result that they wanted. You know, I thought, you know, looking how they played last week, talking about the Atlanta Falcons, and this week, man, they really simplified it for him, and they leaned on their running game like they did early on in his career and did a great job of inserting blockers with condensed formations and really forcing the really aggressive Washington defensive line to stay disciplined. And even when the defensive line was up the field knocking offensive linemen backs, they created some vertical seams that Bijan Robinson and Atlanta Falcons running game took advantage of. And then from that, they came back with the play pass and really just kind of did what they wanted to do day in, play in and play out against the Washington defense.
Do you agree with my premise? When I look at this game, there's so much made about the injuries this week for Washington. I didn't feel like they really proved to be overly problematic. I understand I would have liked to have had Will Harris, the starting safety on defense, and Percy Butler might have helped and made a little bit of a difference playing a lot of downs at safety as well. But by and large, the front seven was intact. I mean, that was kind of the issue here. At the line of scrimmage, they gave up 130 rushing yards to 2 tailbacks. You know, they didn't get enough pressure on Michael Penix. And for the most part, in coverage, you know, Marshon Lattimore, who gave up some things on the outside, some of the stuff we saw down the field, you know, that was against players that are starters here. So I kind of thought offensively, you don't have McLaurin, you don't have Jaden Daniels, you don't have John Bates, you don't have Noah Brown, you know, and so forth. I thought they were plenty good offensively, Kedrick. You score 27 points on the road. And it honestly could have been more. They settled for the field goal at the end early just to try to get an onside kick. But it could have been another 30-point performance, 70 points with a backup quarterback in 2 weeks. They didn't even get to run their 50th play until that kind of garbage time final drive because they couldn't get off the field on third down defensively, giving up over 50% conversion rate throughout most of this game to Atlanta. I thought the offense did enough with Mariota and all the injuries. I didn't think that was really the big problem.
Yeah, I mean, going into a game, you score 27 to 30 points with Dan Quinn and how that defense has been playing. Do you expect to win that football game, especially given the injuries? Obviously, when Jaden's out there on the field, Mariota did a good job. There was probably a couple plays he probably wishes he had back in that game. But when Jaden's out there, they obviously have super confidence that a play is going to be made, and they have been made. So from that standpoint, I think when you look at from the defensive standpoint, not having Percy Butler, maybe some of the communications out of those stack formations where the Falcons were passing the ball at, you could sense a little bit of frustration in the secondary about guys not being where they should be. And that's really a communication thing with guys not having those reps with one another to kind of sort out those bunch formations. And you saw Atlanta kind of go to that early and often and make the completions and obviously the third down conversions.
We'll get to Washington's offense and go through some of the specifics on that side of the ball. But to stick with the theme on defense, from a pass rush standpoint, they had the one sack from Frankie Louvu. It was his first sack of the season. He actually, I thought, had his best game. He was pretty active, 8 tackles. He was pretty violent coming downhill in the running game as well. But that was the only sack defensively for this group against Michael Penix in this game. If you look for hits on the quarterback as well. I mean, it was kind of slim pickings in terms of TFLs, Bobby Wagner, Louvu, Lattimore, Armstrong, Kinlaw, Payne, Goldman all ended up with one. They did some okay things in the running game. But what did you make of the lack of pass rush, and what did you see in that regard?
Early on with this type of run zone run scheme that the Falcons was running, they were ahead of the chains, you know what I mean? So they never really had to get in a true drop back passing type game, when the sacks come. So it was a lot of pistol formations, max protection, so on and so forth. But the Falcons kind of dictated what it is that they wanted to do to the Commanders' defensive line. And so when you are able, from an offensive standpoint, stay ahead of the sticks, not getting second and longs and third and longs, as a defensive lineman, you have to kind of change your mindset because you still have to honor the run and might not be able to get the type of jump you need as far as rushing the passer. So, we all heard the saying, you got to earn the right to rush the passer. Today, those chances, really didn't present themselves because of the early down production that the Falcons had.
Yeah, Kedrick Golston in for Logan Paulson. Really, really smart point in terms of them being ahead of the sticks. It felt like they were in 2nd and 6, 2nd and 5 a lot in the first half. They were in 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3 constantly. And then Washington a couple of times finally started to get them in 2nd and long. But look at what they did on 2nd down after a negative play in this game. 2nd and 17, they got 14. 2nd and 16, they got 43. 2nd and 13, they got 15. 2nd and 12, they got 12. 2nd and 12, you get an incompletion, but there's a defensive flag that gives you a first down. So the couple of times as the game went on where you win on first down, that kind of earns the right that you just referenced, right? Now I can rush the quarterback. 2nd down became a real disaster for them, and then it's a new set of sticks, and they're ahead of the chains again on 1st and 10. So I thought that was really significant. Just looking at the official totals from the box, only 2 quarterback hits listed. Louvu had one, and Armstrong had one, in addition to, the one sack, right? And that's the quarterback hit for Louvu. So one other time did they touch Penix in this game, which to me, that would have been my entire theme here. I don't know if you got to bring extras, 5's a dog, 6 is a blitz, Joe Witt dialing it up, or if it's just 4 getting home kid. But when you looked at Penix's numbers, I talked about this with Logan this week on Take Command, he was one of the worst quarterbacks under pressure in the league. And last week, Carolina got to him, and it's what led to that very non-confident, kind of uneasy, rough performance that he had. That shocks me that, frankly, there wasn't a way to just get more pressure on him. I think you're right, though. I think the way they ran the ball early and the fact they were in manageable down and distances, it just kept Washington from being able to pin their ears back and kind of force them to hold on to the ball. The other thing was, on the back end, it seemed like he was throwing to wide open guys all game long. I mean, it was a lot of 5-10 intermediate stuff, but they just seemed to be a step ahead of Washington. There were a couple big time throws, a couple of big catches in coverage, but it was a lot of, you know, air in the defense, it felt like, more than we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did a great job talking about the Falcons of doing a lot of offensive stuff out of condensed formations. And in that, a lot of those guys, be it at the tight end position, when you get in those tight bunches, talking about the receivers close to the tackle box and inserting them in the run game, it really forced Washington to use their eyes and not try to, you know, create an extra man like defenses like to do. So I thought it was a good job by the Falcons of just making them see a lot and really stressing out their eyes and their fits and really not allowing them to play the game type defense like they like to do.
Kedrick Olsen, Grant Paulson, Take Command, Logan traveling back. We'll get his film breakdown coming up on Tuesday, and then we'll start looking ahead to the Chargers, who incidentally just lost for the first time this season to the New York Giants. So undefeated LA loses to a debuting quarterback in Jackson Dart in New York. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign for Washington that they're going to be mad and coming off of a loss. I will say they were already without their left tackle, who's out for the year, and their all-pro other tackle, their right tackle, Joe Alt, was hurt in this game. X-rays were negative, but it seems like a fairly significant injury in terms of timeline. So maybe Washington will be taking on a Chargers team without either tackle, which I guess from an injury standpoint could be good news. One other thing before we go to the offensive side of the ball, I wanted to just talk for a second about Bijan Robinson and what a good player he is. You know, he is so hard to tackle. When he gets going outside the tackle box, there's nobody better in the league with his speed and his tackle breaking ability. What I really was petrified about all week long was him getting the ball in space on a linebacker. They were able to dial that up against Bobby Wagner. You know, 14 of 18 targets caught this year for a 164, which was second most among running backs in the league. He ends up hitting on a 69-yard catch and run, which really was one of the differences in the ball game. But it was 75 yards on 17 carries and 106 receiving and a touchdown on four catches for Bijan Robinson. Ked, I think he's the best player in the league at a skill position right now.
You know, he's, I mean, you know, people want to put him at a position. He's just a football playing Jesse. You know what I mean? No matter where you put him offensively, he affects the game. And that's what the Falcons saw in him at the University of Texas, and why they took him where they took him is because when you get the ball in his hands, special things happens, right? And so he's so elusive, and you have to tackle him, right? And that might say, well, yeah, of course, like there's some running backs when they see color and they anticipate contact, they kind of slow down and they're what we call easy tacklers. Not him, right? He can run you over, he can juke you out, he can run past you. So as a defender, you don't really know what to expect, right? And he's not looking to fall on the ground easily. He's not looking to run out of bounds. He'll spin, turn his back. He doesn't mind running backwards for 5 or 6 yards. And then in the pass game, he's a matchup nightmare. You know what I mean? Because who do you put on? Who do you put on? A linebacker, but sometimes linebackers can't run with him. And then as far as DBs and safeties, are they strong enough to kind of handle him? So he's definitely an X factor for that Atlanta offense. And when they're scoring points, he's getting the ball and having the type of day that he had today.
On the season coming into this game, 159 of his 239 on the ground had come outside the tackles, second most in the NFL. And on those plays, he had the fifth highest mark, 4.2 per carry after contact. 139 of those 159 had come after contact outside, out wide. It just tells you, like, you're not getting him to the ground by yourself. To your point, he's going to run through the first, even sometimes the second tackle. And I worry about Washington defending those types of teams as the year goes on. Do they have the speed defensively, particularly at linebacker, or am I oversimplifying? Is that not how to defend it? But, like, it seems like when you get Bobby Wagner, when you get a run funneled to him, dude's getting on the ground. He's as good as there is on the planet. But when I need him to run out wide in space and the whole defense, really, if I need to get everybody flowing, it's a different ask, and I don't love their personnel as much in that kind of situation. Seems to me like Atlanta, from that standpoint, is like a worse run matchup. Do you feel that way or no?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like to your point, right? It's easier. I can't use the phone booth reference, right? Because nobody knows what a phone booth is anymore. It's easier to tackle somebody in a closet than it is in a gymnasium, if that makes sense, right? So when you make defenses defend the whole 53, the width of the field, it makes it harder, right? So Bijan is in almost a system, you know, made for him as a running back, right? The outside zone, right, where he can keep it front side. If the linebacker is too slow, or if the linebacker's over pursued, he can put his foot in the ground and get vertical and cut the ball back, right? So he has multiple options on every time he touches the ball. Not to mention the Falcons did a good job of inserting blockers into the line of scrimmage. So now he has the option to keep it front side or backside, but he can also run off of butts when they insert them into the line of scrimmage. So any defense, any linebacker would struggle when you're not able to kind of set the edge, right? And when I say set the edge as a defensive player, is you have to stop the offensive line, right? You have to create a roadblock, create a traffic jam in order for the running back to slow his feet down and force him to make a cut before he wants to. If he's able to pick and choose when he wants to cut the ball up or cut it back, then it's going to be a long day for any defense. And it was just, you know, obviously today it was the Washington Commanders.
180 and a touchdown all purpose for Bijan Robinson in this game against Washington. I do still like where they're at, both with personnel and how they've played defending the run on the interior. It was a real problem last year. They're bottom five in the league all season long. They go out, they get size, they bring in Javon Kinlaw. You felt him again today at times. They bring in Eddie Goldman. He had a massive play in the backfield where he just lifted somebody. They might have been Algier. He lifted him up off the ground and slammed him. I mean, his size is very noticeable. So, like, inside that, the smart cars that they brought in here, it's that is working. And even today, like with the Falcons, really good run game and a prolific performance by their guys, they had to earn every blade of grass. It was, you know, 33 carries to get their 125 yards. You're talking about right around four per carry between Robinson and Algier throughout the duration of the game. It was just a couple of the big ones you allow outside that kind of have my antenna up. The other guy that gets going for them is Drake London. And it just felt like at times it was a little too easy for him. He had 8 catches on 10 targets, kid. He gets paid too. This is a good football player. 110 yards for him in week 4. But if you look, they had him out of the slot on the left. They had him out of the slot on the right. They had him boundary right, way outside. I don't think he ever really lined up much deep to the outside and went down the field. Most of his stuff, I'm looking at his routes right now, was run between the line of scrimmage and about 8-9 yards downfield. That's kind of how they used him. He caught one kind of dig deep over where he actually started out kind of toward the backfield. And then he had one out and up where he toasted Marshawn Lattimore deep down the field and caught, you know, a deep shot that they hadn't thrown a lot of. But what did you see? What was the plan? Like, how did they try to defend London from what you saw?
Well, I think they made it really easy for Penix, right? When you're able to run the ball, and we talked about 4.2 yards a clip, a few of them that squirted out, but it forced you to get into heavier boxes, 8-man boxes, right? Which means you're getting simpler coverages on the outside. You know, the first out and up, I mean, Lattimore is a good football player. He's aggressive. You want that. He's got to be more disciplined with his eyes in order for that not to happen. He's too good of a player to allow that to happen. But like you said, London's a good football player as well. But the Falcons was efficient enough in the run game so that they were able to pick and choose their spots when the coverage allowed for them to, you know, essentially pitch and catch the ball and kind of just march it down the field. I think Penix had a career day, over 300 plus yards. So that speaks to kind of everything we've been talking about. He didn't get pressure. He was comfortable. They were super efficient in the run game. And when it was time to let the ball rip, he let it rip and the receivers made plays for him.
Yeah, and for a team that had not pushed the ball down the field at all with his big arm, air yards in this offense had been few and far between. He connects to London from 43. It was a, you know, mostly run after the catch, but a 69-yarder to Robinson. They got him loose in the flat. 26-yarder to Pitts, 19-yarder to Casey Washington. Mooney had a 15-yarder down the field as well before he got hurt pretty early in this game. So they spread the ball around. You mentioned Penix threw for 300 on the day overall, 20 of 26. For 313 and 2 touchdowns. And I remember a drop on the first throw by Ray McLeod. So easily could have been, you know, 21 of 26 for 315 or so for him. The interception was bad. And we should give the Commanders a little bit of credit here, I guess, because that was their first takeaway of the season in quarter number 14 or whatever that was.
Yeah.
It took game four, but Sanra still seemed like he read him pretty well. He was kind of dropping, zoning, goes up the ladder to make the catch. That's one Penix wants back big time, because it was at a point of the game, too, where Atlanta really could have taken control. Washington gets the ball back, kicks a field goal, and it's a one-possession game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you look at it, it was the right read. It was just poor execution on the throw, but you'll take those for the Commanders' defense. And it really, you know, kept them in the game and allowed it to kind of be interesting, you know, at the end. So, you know, that's football games. And one thing you can say about the Commanders is they, you know, they continue to fight. They continue to try to go out there and scrap around. And so, you know, I think, you know, like we talked about the last time I was on with you after the Green Bay loss, right? It's still early in the year, right? 2-2, right? 50-50. But there's some bright spots to look at to really be, you know, optimistic about the future.
We need to get you a win to talk about here, kid. I mean, Logan gets to do the post games at home. He's got two victories to break down. That's easier. Kid's got to sit here and chop it up after two L's so far for the 2-2 Commanders. Last defensive question, and then we're going to go to the offense. Is there anything that you're seeing, or was there anything in this game that you worry about, like, longer term sustainably? Like, I'll give you my one, and you could either blow me out of the water, tell me I'm wrong, or give me a thought on that, or whatever you've got. But I continue to wonder about Lattimore as their corner one and as a shutdown guy. I think he can play. I think, you know, the idea that he's like washed, or what fans try to say, I think it's way over the top. You want everyone to be perfect at that position, and it's just not reality. But they did pay him like an elite corner. They traded for him. They said this offseason they thought he could be a legitimate shutdown one. I don't think he's at the level he was when he was an all-pro with New Orleans. That's not necessarily a hot take, but I do hope they can get more out of him going forward, because when you watch him, this should be a matchup, like a big, physical, not a twitchy or explosive, speedy receiver like a Drake London. This should be the kind of matchup, honestly, where Lattimore eats, like the Mike Evans type guys over the years. And so that's something as we go forward I'm monitoring. I don't necessarily love. I also worry about them covering pass catching backs, and today did not quell my fears there with the personnel they've put together. What's something on defense that you're kind of monitoring going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lattimore, I mean, I think it's obviously when we got him, he was injured, he was banged up, right? And there's a little bit of a learning curve as far as, you know, what he did in New Orleans versus, you know, what Coach Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. asking him to do. But like you said, man, at this day and age, man, with the passing game being so efficient, right? You know, that one double move to out and up that London got, you know, I can guarantee you he wants that one back, right? He's covered that route in his sleep. And so it's just going to take him, you know, a little bit more strain, a little bit more eye discipline, just to realize, you know, he's too good of a player to allow that to happen. You know what I mean? I don't worry. Obviously, you know, Bobby Wagner's still playing at a super high level, right? And if he wasn't in year, 15 or 16, I don't think, you know, when you're a Hall of Fame type player, right, and you get older in your career, these type of things happen. But he's still out there playing every single down. I think he does well in coverage. But obviously Robinson's is a matchup nightmare for anybody. You know what I mean? You tell me a linebacker that's going to be able consistently to cover him down in and down out, I'll tell you that's a defensive coordinator that is probably going to get a lot of not nice words from the linebacker that has to cover him, because at the end of the day, if he was that good of a cover, he'd be playing safety or defensive back. All good. The thing that I'm – excitement's the wrong word, but this staff, this organization has proven that they're going to play the best players, right? And so if there's another guy in that building that can step up at any position, they're going to put him on the field, right? And so as of right now, we have to trust that this is the best that they have and these guys are doing what they're supposed to do. If not, Coach Quinn and the staff are going to find whoever that is and put him out there. And that's one thing that you can say about them is they're loyal to the team and playing the best people.
That's a really good point. I mean, we saw for the second time in as many weeks, Chris Paul, a seventh-round pick by a different regime, get the nod over their third-round guard, Brandon Coleman, based on the competition that's ongoing at guard. They really like what they've seen out of Paul. I thought he played well again, first blush. I'll have to go back and watch. All right, let's pivot over to the offense. So I want to start with Mariota. Agree or disagree? To me, the game he played was exactly what you ask him to do, basically, as a backup. He has the one interception. By the way, it was his first pick in 83 pass attempts as a Washington Commander, and it was the only interception still in closing in on 100 pass attempts with the team that he's thrown. He overshot Jalen Lane, who was pretty open, actually, on a deep ball in the end zone, kind of led toward a deep safety, and the interception was on the QB, maybe. We'll have to go back and see if anybody says otherwise or if Lane saw something different than the quarterback, but you take that play out of it. What else do you want from Mariota here, Ked? I mean, he runs for 20 yards. He's 16 of 27 passing for a 160 and a couple of touchdowns. He responds to the interception coming down the field on an amazing 11-play, 76-yard drive with a dime he drops into Debo, 24 yards. For a backup without two of his top three receivers, his top blocking tight end, an offensive line where they've switched out two guards in the last couple of weeks on the road in a loud building, I don't know, man. Anybody who wants more than that, I think you're probably being unrealistic.
I mean, I think you said it best. I mean, I mean, going into it, if you would have told, hey, this is his stat line, this is the points that they scored, I think anybody would have took that. I still think we view Marcus Mariota as that young man that was running around in Oregon's field, and we're
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Still kind of waiting to see that. But I just think it goes to show you it's not a knock on Marcus. It's just what Jaden is to this offense, right? And when Jaden's out there, you know, it just seems like the water starts boiling a whole lot faster. And in that, you know what I mean? And I don't know if it's, you know, Jaden is just, you know, he gets the ball out faster, so he gives receivers more time to run, yards after catch. And then, not to mention, Mariota can still do it with his legs, but as a defensive coordinator, you have to account for Daniels in the run game, right? And so, is Daniels getting a lot more simplified coverages to be able to go over the top?
FanDuel's getting you ready for the NFL season with an offer you won't want to miss. New customers can bet just $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right. Pick a bet, bet $5, and if it wins, you'll unlock $300 in bonus bets to use all across the app. You can build parlays, bet player props, ride live lines, whatever your style, FanDuel has you covered. The NFL season is almost here. The only question is, are you ready to play? Visit FanDuel.com/command to download the FanDuel app today and get started.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And it sounds like, by all accounts, publicly in the media today, Ian Rappaport came out and said this. The guys that met with Dan Quinn this week on the CBS telecast, Ian Eagle, J.J. Watt said something to this effect. You know, it looks like all systems could be go for Jaden Daniels against the Chargers next week. So if you get through these two games 1-1 with your offense averaging about 34 points per game, I think you take that and you keep it moving. And you got things to fix, obviously, but 2-2 with a tough one coming up cross country against the Chargers. Very winnable. They just lost to the Giants. You know, I think you'll kind of take that and move on. I do remember a couple misses from Mariota in addition to the pick. You know, it's not a perfect position. There was kind of a throw to Ertz on the sideline. Could have been a nice gain in a first down where he misfired. He was kind of, you know, punching his hand after that one. But by and large, I thought fairly decisive. Ball came out, and he threw to the right guy most of the time. Wasn't a special performance, but again, you know, you're a backup in the league. You know, ceiling is going to be lower. Ideally with him, the floor is pretty high, and today I thought that was the case. He did have to hold on to the ball longer in this game. You know, I thought Atlanta did a good job taking a couple of, like, first reads away. In the end, when you look at the sacks, it was only, I think, two total sacks for them, but they actually got a lot of pressure and flushed him from the pocket, especially in the first half, I thought, several times. And I noticed one thing. I went back and watched their first drive. You know, they use that little concept where, like, just to steal 5 yards, it's like a little pop pass where, like, Ertz just kind of, you know, runs a quick little in, like, against zone and just stands there. Yep. And the Falcons took that away multiple times where Mariota kind of came up, not even a three-step, like, looked for Ertz to steal those 5 yards, and it's not there. And then he kind of flustered, pulled the ball down, has to move around. So Atlanta had a decent plan to kind of force him into some second looks too, which I give him credit for.
Yeah, I mean, that, you have to do that, right? I mean, when you go and you study and you break down film on the NFL level, you figure out the things the teams like to do, and you say, listen, if they're going to beat us, it's not going to be doing the things that they're most comfortable doing. The only thing that I think that I saw watching Marcus was whenever he scrambles, he always turns his back to the line of scrimmage. Right. And so from that standpoint, for that split second, he doesn't know where anybody is. His back is to the line of scrimmage versus just, you know, I remember Philip Rivers was great at this. Right. He would just continue to climb the pocket until he had to tuck it and run. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, I've seen that a lot out of him where when it's not there, he kind of spins in place and then the scramble starts. Right. And so I think and that's me being super nitpicky, but I think if he was just able to keep his eyes down, feel a little bit more on some of that pressure, and honestly, his legs will get you first downs and move the chains, right? And so if it's not there, tuck it and run and make people deal with you from that standpoint.
Yeah, he had a 22-yard carry, Mariota did, keeping the football in this game on a long third down to kind of keep the chains moving. In fact, that was after back-to-back penalties, so it was a first and 30. And Washington ended up converting because of the long Mariota scramble on third down. Not very often you need 30 over three plays and you go get it. I thought the start of the game on offense was Deebo Samuel. You knew he was going to have to be heavily involved. He came into the game with just 4 carries. He almost equaled that. He had 3 touches on the ground on jet action end around stuff. Long of 7, only 9, so he averaged 3 a pop. But they got him in the air through 6 targets, 6 catches, 72 yards. Thought he made some really nice hand catches, Ked. Did a nice job hauling balls in tight coverage, you know, not having the ball knocked out of his hand. Caught a touchdown from 24 yards out. He continues to be the focal point of the offense. On a day like today, it goes without saying, you don't have Terry or Noah Brown. It's going to have to be him. But it's pretty clear to me, like, Cliff sits down at his desk each week, and he's trying to figure out, okay, how do I want this thing to look? The first thing he thinks about is, how do I get maximum Deebo Samuel involvement? And he kind of starts there and you see it on his first 15 script. A lot of times, first few plays of the game, Deebo is right in the mix, either with a run or a quick, easy pass. They want to get the ball in his hands.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, Cliff, when he was the head coach at Arizona, probably was like, man, I wish I had this guy on my side, right? So ever since he was in Arizona, he's been dreaming about ways to give Deebo the ball. But, you know, hats off to Deebo and Cliff, because without Terry, you know who the ball is going to. You know what I mean? And so for them to still have that type of production, knowing that the Falcons defense would be keen on him, you got to like the performance from Deebo, because he still lets you know that he can still play football at an extremely high level. And now, you know, hopefully, you know, who knows what's going on with Terry, but he's proven that he's still that type of player to go out there and help you win football games, even when he is the main target focal point of the defense. So once some of those other guys that they just pulled up, you know, kind of, you know, get their legs underneath them. You know, like you said, you don't really worry about the offense, because with all the guys they had out, they still were able to have a super productive day.
Yeah, I don't, and maybe someone will push back on this. I'll ask you this question. I don't think that, you know, would it have been better to have Terry? Of course. Is he a much better wide receiver than anybody else that kind of filled in for him today? Obviously, that's why he's a $30 million man. I did not feel like they missed him a whole lot. There were not plays necessarily, maybe a couple times where I thought you're throwing to a well-covered guy, like Chris Moore down the field one time. was blanketed and couldn't get open. But Jalen Lane, 2 for 18, was twitchy and kind of got free coming back to the line of scrimmage. Luke McCaffrey had a touchdown catch and a 16-yard reception as well, 2 for 21. Even Tay Martin on his only look, cut fresh off the practice squad. I thought his comeback was like a really well-run route, made the catch, 14 yards, kept a drive moving. You know, if you're looking at the kids, not a lot of opportunities, but if you're Lane, you get three balls thrown your way, and he actually had a much longer, like a 25-yard ball that came back on a Ben Sinnott hold as well, or else it's like a three-catch, 50-yard game for him. I kind of liked what I saw from the young guys, and I didn't feel watching the game. Maybe once where Moore is the guy targeting, it might be Terry, or you lack some explosiveness. Like, that was a huge factor, but it goes without saying. Without McLaurin and Noah Brown, it's just a different thing, man. That's two of your top three guys at receiver.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, it good job by Cliff, right, and the offensive staff trying to devise a game plan that you didn't notice that Terry wasn't out there. You know what I mean? But with him healthy and active, you know, it changes how defenses have to play you, even in, you know, how they fit the run game, how many guys they dedicate to the run box. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, Terry has earned his respect, like you said, from how he's being compensated contractually. And he's proven that if given the opportunity, you know, he very rarely doesn't come down with those 50-50 type balls, right? And so having him with Debo out there only makes you that much more explosive. So I think it was just a good job of the offensive staff knowing kind of where they were this week with not having some guys available and doing a great job of coming up, you know, with a game plan that, produced enough to win a football game, even though they didn't, because the defense didn't hold up to their end of the deal.
Back-to-back games with a touchdown, by the way, for Luke McCaffrey. Went 19 without one to start his NFL career, and now in games 20 and 21, he has scored for Washington. He also had a near 60-yard kick return in this game as well. Every single week, this team is doing something really good on special teams, especially in the return game. They have the number one time of yard, where you start drives from, I should say.
Starting point,
yeah, after kick returns. They're top three in punt returns as well. They've done a good job in coverage. But in this game, it was McCaffrey's turn. We've seen Debo kind of hit the home run a couple times in the last few weeks, and Lane had the 90-yard punt return touchdown. Lane didn't really get opportunities today. He did put two balls on the ground, which is unforgivable, but he was quick to pounce on the first, and he got bailed out by a teammate right before the half on the second one. But I just think the way they're returning kicks, they got something going here with Coach Izzo. Huge holes almost every single time they return the ball right in the middle of the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's the third phase of the game that nobody really talks about unless a kick gets blocked or a punt gets returned or a kickoff gets returned. But their coverage is like you said, their starting point. I mean, you think about it, if you get a 20, 30-yard return, that's three first downs, right? So when you put it in those type of terms, people really realize, like, man, this is really important. Same thing, not only the first downs, but the starting field position, right? And so when you set up offenses with good field position, it allows them to score points and to be comfortable at where they're at on the field. So Coach Izzo's done a great job. Obviously, you know, they take a lot of pride in it. You see a ton of energy by those guys just going out there playing football and happy to be out there. So they're going to got to keep that, you know, keep that going. And like you said, I don't believe that I think we'll still see a ton of production, you know, out of those return groups.
Yeah, while we're heaping some praise on the special teams, Matt Gay has been under the gun. A lot of people calling for tryouts at the kicker position, bringing somebody in to compete with him, moving on from him. Gay was good on all four of his field goal attempts in this game, from 43, 52, 41, and 42 yards. He's now made six consecutive kicks. So I think for the time being, I think you could put that conversation to bed. His confidence presumably growing with all of the balls he's seen go through the uprights, and the team's confidence in him after six straight kicks has to be growing as well. Also, no issues on kickoffs. I know he went out of bounds last week. You know, it was all clean on kickoffs. I thought the onside kick, while wasn't recovered, that went to Pitts, hopped at the right spot, kind of gave him a chance if he was to have bobbled the ball. So you can't have much better individual performance than Gay had. Going to the running game really quickly, Ked. So they end up splitting carries between Chris Rodriguez and Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. I mentioned that Debo had three end-arounds. He had Mariota scramble and go read option a couple times. They gave Chris Moore officially a carry in this game. And then McNichols had two attempts as well. But this was kind of a, you know, first time we've seen it, instead of using all three of them, a split between Rodriguez early and Krosky Merritt, mostly in the second half. On that 11-play, 79-yard drive I mentioned, the answer to the interception with about 8.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter to make it a one-possession game where they got the two-point conversion on the really nice design to Zach Ertz. That was the Krosky Merritt drive. It was the first time all season we've kind of seen them feed him. He ends up 7 for 47 with a 6.7 average, a long of 16. I am smitten with this dude, Ked. I am just enamored. The way he runs is like, this is a dude. If he's on your squad at Stonebridge, you're going down and telling Logan, can we give him the ball more, please? Like, every time he touches the ball, he does something impressive. And you can't get upset that he's not getting it more when Chris Rodriguez has a 48-yard run and has a team-high 59 and averages 8 today or whatever. Last week, you know, he did his job. McNichols had a 60-yard touchdown. So when everybody's running well, I'm not going to have any real issues about how we're divvying it up. What I know is Krosky Merritt has the juice. Like, that's the most explosive guy they got. And I don't remember being that excited every time a guy gets the ball on the ground here in years. I mean, a long, long time.
I mean, you know, the thing about
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
About running backs is right. Sometimes they get a lot of praise, and sometimes they take a lot of the blame. Right? It's just kind of one of those positions where do you get the look that you want? Did the offensive lineman block it up the way that they should? In that drive specifically, they rolled the hot hand. You know what I mean? He was hitting the holes the way that you wanted to get hit. He wasn't. You know, he was breaking tackles. He was moving the pile forward, and I think that just goes to, when people do the most with their opportunities, they're going to continue to allow them to get more opportunities to see what they do with it. Like you said, the running backs have been really good all year, right? And so there's only so many carries to go around when you got Jaden Daniels, you got McLaurin, you got Sanders, you got Ertz, so on and so forth. But it's a good problem to have, you know what I mean? Because all three of those guys have proven at different times they can roll off yardage and help us win football games. So, you know, you got to like what they did, and hats off to it. And maybe they just get more confident, maybe coming up with some formations where they have both of them in the game at the same time.
14 carries for 116 yards for Rodriguez and Krosky Merritt combined in this game. You will take that from a rushing standpoint. One guy that was noticed a couple times in the blocking game did some okay things, but was flagged twice in this game, once negating a decent return and another time on a long completion to Lane, which I mentioned, was Ben Sinnott, the second-year tight end, you know, who can't seem to get involved in the passing game. But, you know, as much as I'd like to see him get targets and catches, I'm willing to also, you know, tip my cap if he goes full Logan Paulson and just pushes people around in the run game as well. Although as a second-round pick just outside of the top 50, you know, my expectations are higher. But take me inside the locker room on that a little bit as a player. If you're like, how do you get him to a point where he's confident and feeling good after a game like this, where you don't really help on the box score? There's probably some good things in the run game when we go back and look at it, but you're flagged twice. And you know, you hear it from fans. You hear it in the media. People are going to be asking questions. There's just not a lot of deposits in the bank. Like, how do you get to a good place mentally when you're spinning your tires and you just can't seem to kind of have that game so everybody cuts you some slack?
Well, I think, you know, only the guys in that building would know. How does he go in day in and day out? Does he prepare? Does he watch film? Does he do extra work? Is he talking with defensive linemen, offensive linemen on how to do things, right? At the end of the day, he's a young player that's still developing, right? And so don't get so fixated on, you know, the negative, because at the end of the day, it probably was just, it's just a fundamental breakdown on the whole. It was just a fundamental breakdown on the whole. And that stuff happens, I think. And you can't start pressing, wanting to be more involved in the passing game, because like you said, when your numbers call, you have to make the most of that. So obviously I know that environment over there is super positive. It's about accountability and being positive and fixing situations like this. But he's a young player who, you know, you tell him to pick his head up and ask questions and continue to work, because that's the only way that you're going to fix these issues that you have. But this game humbles a lot of people, right? And that's just as part of this process. And, you know, I can think of a lot of really good football players that struggled at times, but with the right mindset on their end and with the right program of development from the organizational standpoint, they'll be just fine. So that doesn't really bother me, because if he was an undrafted guy, there wouldn't really be that much expectation. But because they took this guy with this pick, there's a expectations that, you know, people, fans, people in the media, so on and so forth, expect, but not understand. He's still a young player that is still finding his way in a whole new system in a whole new city, and maybe doing some things he wasn't necessarily asked to do at his college.
Yeah, you just feel like, you know, with two games having gone by without John Bates, and I know he's mostly a blocker anyway, but there was more opportunity here for a tight end to kind of step up and maybe get some looks, and he'll get through this, you know, kind of without a target or a catch in these two games. All right, so they're 2-2. They've won at home twice, convincingly, by the way, by an average of like 15 points. They've blown a couple teams out they probably should have. The Giants in week one, and then the Raiders short week after Monday Night Football, flying cross country. But they handled their business. They obviously played very, very poorly in Green Bay. I'm not going to lump this game into that category. This was much more competitive. But defensively, twice on the road, it has not been very good. Big picture, as they get ready for the Chargers to fly cross country for their longest trip yet of the season, your thoughts and how do they get things right, especially on the defensive side of the ball?
You know, I think you go in, you know, you take accountability for what you can do personally as a player. I know the coaches are going to grind their butts off, try to put these players in the best situation. But you can't allow one performance, positive or negative, to affect the other, right? The Chargers are going to present a whole new set of formations, a whole new set of things you have to deal with, and understand they don't have a Bijan Robinson or a Drake London. Now, they got some other dudes over there, right? But how Atlanta did it is going to be – how the Chargers are going to do it is going to be different than how Atlanta did it. So refocus your mind, quiet the noise, just understand still a lot of football left to be played. And go out there and get it done. You know, what else more can you say, right? I think I have no question about the leadership, but, you know, Bobby Wagner's proven that wherever he's been. Lou Vu is starting to play some of his better ball. You know, they'll hopefully get some guys back on the defensive side that missed this game, and, you know, go out there and fly around.
Yeah, it's going to be a more winnable game maybe than people would have thought. If the Chargers were 4-0 and had manhandled the Giants, you know, you lose this game to a bad New York team, and I think you look a lot more like the Chargers of the last few years that kind of ride the roller coaster, that are really good sometimes and bad others. On top of that, you know, Joe Alt got hurt, and as the game went on, Justin Herbert got pressured 50% of the time, despite a 2.5-second time to throw, which is lightning quick. I mean, that's getting the ball out. And so they weren't able to protect him now, down to backup tackles on both sides of the line. And I'm not a doctor, and we have no idea what's going to happen with Joe Alt, but he was carted off the field for x-rays that were negative. It's a high ankle sprain. It's really hard to imagine he'd be able to play in 7 days. So I think that this is a possibility for them to get a win that'll look really good on the resume. But they got to look a lot better defensively. They got to shore some things up in coverage especially. And I'll be curious to see what Dan Quinn has to say post-game as he talks to the media this afternoon, too, about some of the time management things at the end of the half, burning a weird timeout early in the third quarter. There's some little things they'll have to clean up. You got to be a little sharper on the road if they're going to get a win. Kedrick, it's always fun, buddy. I know, speaking of wins, the Stonebridge Bulldogs were just blowing somebody out this weekend. So congratulations on that. I'm going to get out there. I'm too busy in Fairfax watching other football. But I'm going to get out to Loudoun County to see Stonebridge here very shortly. So we'll have to see what game I should come to.
Oh, you're always welcome, man. We'll make sure you're on the sideline, and I'm sure you'll give me a full-fledged breakdown after the game on things I need to improve on. So
No.
Wouldn't want it no other way.
You don't have to worry about me, man. I'm going to high-five you and tell you good job. The boys,
we'll get you out here to Leesburg after the game, man. Take you to one of your favorite establishments.
Oh, see, now you're speaking my language. I like my wings extra crispy, maybe some Old Bay dry rub.
And how about this? Let's wait about a few more weeks till we really get that little chill in the air so we can put a little quarter zip on, man, kind of walk around without getting a little sweaty forehead.
Yeah, see, now you know me very well. The quarter zip, come on, you're speaking my language. All right, it was fun. There's Kedrick Golston filling in for Logan Paulson. This is our post-game recap. We try to get something for you right after the game. This has been Take Command. Tuesday, we've got our film review with Logan. Thursday, we'll start looking ahead to the Chargers. 3 episodes a week. Spread the word wherever you get your audio. Download, subscribe, rate, review, do all that podcasty stuff. If you watch us, YouTube or Team 980, 106.7 The Fan is the way to do that on YouTube. Thanks for checking us out. We'll catch up with you in just a couple of days. Commanders, 2-2 after a loss in Atlanta.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before.
Right. Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.